The Brewers are back in the headlines, this time for a free agent named Brian Anderson. And no, it is not the TV announcer. What does this mean for the Brewers? And who is the possible odd man out? We'll break it down as I'll be joined by special guest Jack Stern, who covers the Brewers from top to bottom over at Brew Crew Ball and The Score Wisconsin. Stay tuned in. You are Locked On Brewers.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thank you, as always, Brewers fans. Welcome back into the Locked On Brewers podcast. Thank you for always making Locked On Brewers your first listen each and every day. Do not forget, we are free and available on all podcast platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify. There are probably about 100 others, but nonetheless, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Brewers. You can follow the show on Facebook now. I've entered the world of Facebook with the podcast at Locked On Brewers Podcast, and of course on YouTube as well. Just search at Locked On Brewers, so close to 1,000 subscribers. I'm your host, Brandon Snide, a lifelong and diehard Milwaukee Brewers fan, actually recording this podcast as we speak, just minutes away from American Family Field. I would hope if you're a Brewers fan listening to this podcast, you know it, and I know it is home to our Milwaukee Brewers. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon_Snide. I really appreciate you guys allowing me to steal some of your time to talk about our favorite team, the Milwaukee Brewers. As always, Locked On Brewers is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And we're going to jump right into it. I'm joined by a special guest, Jack, and I'm going to tell you right now, Jack, the Brewers have been, they've been pretty busy. They've been active in free agency. They've added a couple of names. We saw the other day they added Brian Anderson, made a few trades. He's a guy, though, we're going to jump right into the Brian Anderson talk. He's a guy that he's fought through some injuries. He could potentially serve as an everyday third baseman. So, Jack Stern, I'll welcome you to the show. I'm going to ask you how you're doing, because that's the most important thing here. At the Locked On Brewers podcast, make sure you're doing good. And number two, what did you think of the latest signing by the Milwaukee Brewers?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on here and talk a little Brewers baseball. I'm doing all right. Starting to get that baseball itch a little bit again. I'm getting tired of having to just break down moves on paper, and I want to actually start seeing things play out on the field. And as far as Brian Anderson goes, I think that this does check a couple of boxes for a pretty typical Brewers signing. He's someone who, his market value was down a little bit because he has struggled the past couple of years. The shoulder injuries have really been the big story for him. He's a right-handed bat, which is something that they needed balance on that roster because they were pretty lefty heavy. I don't think it's a perfect fit for that reason, because he does have reverse platoon splits for his career, but he does give them a little bit more balance, and he's probably still a better option against left-handed pitchers than some of these left-handed bats that they had. And he's versatile. He can play third base and he can play right field, depending on what kind of defensive metric you're looking at. Some say that he's graded out a little better at third base. Some say he's a little bit better in right field. He does have a very strong arm in the outfield. So he's a guy who could conceivably fit at two different positions. I think that right now, just looking at the best fit for him, it's probably going to be playing a little bit of both. You're probably going to see him get a little bit of time at third base, a little bit of time in right field too, just because unless the Brewers have another move lined up to address their outfield situation. You know, the initial report coming from Craig Mish, who covers the Miami Marlins and broke the financial details of this deal for Anderson, there's going to be a lot of playing time for him at third base. But I think right now, as the roster is currently constructed, it looks like there's a clear path for him in right field, just because the only right-handed options that the Brewers have on their 40-man roster in that outfield, you have Tyrone Taylor, who's a right-handed hitter and is currently penciled in as the starting right fielder. You have Blake Perkins, who's a switch hitter on the 40-man roster, was signed to a split deal back in November, but he's not a guarantee to make the roster, and he's never played in a big league game before. And then beyond that, that's all they have. So even if you're in a situation where Garrett Mitchell or Sal Frelick are starting in center field, those guys are left-handed. So you're probably looking at some center field time for Taylor against lefties, and that opens up a spot in right field. Like I said, there could be some at-bats for him in the infield as well. I'm sure that the Brewers are going to get him a decent amount of exposure at both positions, but I don't think that he's necessarily going to pencil right away as an everyday option at either one of those positions. And maybe I'm wrong. But just looking at this from my perspective and looking at the kind of player that Anderson is at this point in his career, there is a little bit of bounce back potential, but I'm a little more skeptical than a lot of people are on that. I think that right now the best fit for him is you kind of throw him into that position player group in a couple of different spots and in that mix, in that outfield mix with some of these prospects, in the infield mix with guys like Bryce Terang and Abraham, guys who don't necessarily have a starting spot locked down yet, but he's going to kind of join this group of guys who are competing for at-bats, and then we'll see there. And even in a situation where some of those prospects get the first dibs on the playing time and they don't perform as well as the Brewers are hoping, Anderson does give you someone who is not going to be a great bat, but he does give you a little bit of a higher floor than some of these prospects do. So he's not the greatest impact signing that the Brewers could have made. And like I said, I'm not quite as high on the bounce bar, but I do think that at the very least, he raises the floor of this position player group.
Let me ask you this, Jack. You talk about a guy other than 2019 was the last time he had a full season where he played 126 games. 2022, he was a non-throwing shoulder injury, 98 games. In 2021, he only played 67 games. Any concerns going forward with the injuries for Brian Anderson?
I think I'm still a little bit concerned, and part of it stems from the fact that, so as you mentioned, he had the shoulder problems in his non-throwing shoulder. He had surgery for that after the 2021 season. And then it's an issue that kind of cropped up again down the stretch in 2022. It didn't seem to be as severe as it was the first bout of it, but he did hit the injured list, soreness in that shoulder near the end of the year. So I think there is a little bit of concern that, you know, can he get over that and can he get back to full health? We're at a point now where if you also factor in the shortened 2020 season, like you said, he hasn't played in a full season's worth of games since 2019. And I think that all kind of factors into why it's probably better to consider him as a little more of a part-time piece than someone who's going to be in the lineup every single day at a specific position. But look, the Brewers wouldn't have signed him to this deal if they didn't have at least some level of confidence that he can get back to health. It is pending a physical too. And at the time that we're talking about this, the physical hasn't been reported as him having passed it, and the signing's not official yet. But I would imagine there probably won't be a huge hang up there considering it's a relatively small amount of money. So I don't think that there's going to be anything that really scuttles this deal in the physical. But I do think that Brian Anderson does have something to prove both in terms of his performance and in terms of his health. And I wouldn't necessarily bet on him getting all the way back to where he was a few years ago. So it's going to be interesting to see how much he's able to take the field and what version of Brian Anderson they're going to get when he is on the field.
Joined by Jack Stern from Brew Crew Ball here on the Locked On Brewers podcast. Jack, I'm going to preface this up myself here with, before we get into this. I am a huge Jackson Chourio fan. So before a couple of weeks ago, when there wasn't a whole lot of news going on, we talked about what are the chances we could see Jackson Chourio up at the major league level. And I said, don't be surprised because Craig Counsell said it. I'm just, you know, Craig Counsell, the manager of our Milwaukee Brewers, Jack, he's the one who said, and I'm paraphrasing him, you know, why not basically bring him up? Baseball America released their top 100 prospects. Chourio's came in at number 3. The two in front of him, however, are currently in the major league. So it's only a matter of time before Jackson shoots up to number 1. Sal Frelick actually came in at number 34 on the list, which I thought was kind of cool. What is the chance? First off, let me ask you two-part question. Where do you think Jackson starts the year, whether double A or triple A? And then do you think there's a chance, folks, that we see him in Milwaukee, Jack, in the major leagues?
So I think he's probably going to start the year in double A. Okay. That's where he made it to last year. And that promotion, I think there were two reasons behind that. One was that they wanted to get him a little more playing time at the end of the year. And also just that he performed well at every stop. So they figured, why not give him this promotion and see if he can handle it in a small sample size. I think he's probably going to start the year in double A. And as to your question about whether or not we can see him in Milwaukee this season, I wouldn't count on it, but I do think that there is better than a non-zero chance that he's in Milwaukee, maybe comes up down the stretch or something. But the reason that I do think there is that small chance and the fact that I think he's going to start that high up on the minor league ladder in double A is because the Brewers have gotten into the habit recently of being very aggressive with promoting their top prospects and really getting these guys through the minor league ranks quickly. You talked about Sal Friedlich, and mm-hmm. some of these other guys too, Garrett Mitchell, Joey yep. Weimer, are all guys who progressed through the system very, very quickly. I think that the Brewers are at a point in their development system where if they believe that a player has the tools to succeed and that this is a really good raw talent, that they're not going to waste a whole lot of time and they're going to move these guys up quickly and they're going to try to get them making an impact in the big leagues as soon as possible. And I think that's especially important for a team like the Brewers that is playing in a smaller market, and they're going to have to be more reliant on developing guys from within. The Brewers are not going to go out, for better or for worse, and this is a little bit of another can of worms that you can open up here, but they're not going to go out and they're not going to sign the best position players on the market. They're not going to sign the premium talent. So they're going to have to develop it from within. And that's something that they've struggled with for most of this recent era here since David Stearns took over. And now it's technically the Matt Arnold era, but it's effectively a continuation of the same regime here. But they're going to have to start developing talent from within. So it's going to be interesting to see what these next wave of prospects do. I'm not quite as optimistic about some of these guys as the Brewers make it sound like they are internally or as some other fans are, but I do think that Chorio is going to be the real deal. When you look at the numbers that he was able to put up at his age in A-ball as an 18-year-old, and you look at the list of guys who have performed that well at that level, you're talking about a lot of superstars like Mike Trout, Vlad Guerrero Jr., guys who have come up to the big leagues and have hit the cover off the ball. I think there's really no denying the talent here with Chorio. It's just going to be a matter of if he can refine that plate discipline a little bit, maybe cut down on the swings and misses. But there's a reason that he's going to soon be ranked as the number one prospect in all of baseball by Baseball America. This guy's a legitimate talent. It's very rare for the Brewers to, you know, appear this high up on a prospect list and have someone like that. But there's definitely star potential here. And it's going to be interesting to see if he does crack the big leagues at the end of the year. I wouldn't count on it, like I said. But I do think we are going to see him sooner than later. He's rising through the system really quickly. And, you know, something could change in his development. But just with the talent, the tools, and how quickly the Brewers like to get these guys to the big leagues, I don't think we're going to be waiting for a whole lot longer in the grand scheme of things.
If Jack Stern, ladies and gentlemen, is telling you something, you got to pay attention, write it down. Jackson Chorio is a, that's what he's saying. I'm just saying what Jack said. Jack, real quick, before we
move on. Star potential. Yes.
Star potential. Before we move on, real quick, you were talking about this prospect class, and it's as a Brewer fan, it's hard to go back and remember such a fun group of guys. You maybe go back to like Corey Hart, JJ Hardy, Ricky Weeks, all that group. I'm talking about a collective group. Obviously, you've had some exciting guys come up. Kesson Hira, recently, who was a star in the minors as a prospect. Outside of Jackson Chorio as being your potential star, who excites you the most out of this, you know, Frelick, Weimer, Mitchell, Gasser, you know, enter a name. Who excites you the most?
It's got to be Frelick.
Okay.
It's really not even close for me, because I believe that out of all the guys that they have in this system right now, and they have talent down there, but I think that out of all the guys they have in their system, Frelick is the only one who I think you can plug him into a big league lineup right now, and he's going at least a slightly above average hitter. And the reason I believe that is because the plate discipline is great. The bat to ball skills are great. He can use all fields. And when you have tools like that, that gives you a pretty high floor. He may not have the power that you're hoping for some other guys. And maybe that holds him back from becoming, really an elite hitter or anything. But he has the tools to come up and perform and to be at least a respectable hitter. Compare that to guys like Garrett Mitchell and Joey Weimer, who have the big strikeout issues. Garrett Mitchell also hits the ball on the ground a lot, which kind of limits his ability to tap into his raw power. I just don't have those same concerns with Frelick. It just seems like a much safer profile. I wouldn't necessarily say he has the most upside of anyone in the system, but he's definitely got the highest floor. And for that reason, if we're talking about guys who can make an impact this year, he's definitely the one that I would pick, hands down.
Incredible, incredible, insightful things from Jack Stern from Brew Crew Ball. As always, a ton of talk about for the Milwaukee Brewers. And coming up next, I'm a little curious. I want to get Jack's thought. I'm curious what the next move for the Milwaukee Brewers is. Could it be a trade? Maybe it's another free agent signing. Willie Adames had some interesting words yesterday regarding his contract situation down at the Hot Stove Cold Brewers event. We'll get into that. Plus, will Corbin Burnes be a Milwaukee Brewer much longer? I hate having those words come out of my mouth, but I'm going to gather Jack's thoughts next. But first, I have to tell you about my friends over at betonline.net. Betonline.net is your number one source for all your betting info, sports news, and analysis. Get the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there, from pro football. We got playoffs starting. We got college basketball. I mean, there's all kinds of good stuff. And eventually March Madness will be right around the corner. They've got it all at betonline.net. And if you love sports podcasts, you better love this sports podcast first. I'm telling you, that's the number one rule here, guys. You got to like this one. Then you can find the rest of them over at betonline.net. They are always the fastest and easiest way to get your sports betting info. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more. BetOnline, where the game starts. Thank you for making Locked On Brewers your first listen. For your next listen, check out the Locked On MLB Prospects. Host Lindsey Crosby is a prospect encyclopedia. Jack and I were just talking about the prospect for the Milwaukee Brewers. Well, he breaks them all down, and he is going deep on the MLB stars of tomorrow. It's free and available wherever you get your podcasts. There we go. The Brewers failed to reach a deal prior to the arbitration hearing with their ace, Cy Young Award winner Corbin Burnes. However, Jack, they did reach deals with 13 out of the other 14 players that were eligible. We're going to jump right into it, Jack. What were your takeaway from some of these deals?
So it's not especially surprising to see that the Brewers were able to reach deals with a lot of these players. I think that most parties are going to want to avoid going through the arbitration process and avoid having to go through a hearing. But throughout this whole time, Corbin Burnes was the one player that I had a feeling they were not going to be able to come to terms on a deal with, just because when you look at his performance from the last couple of years, it seemed to me like he was probably going to aim for a pretty decent raise in arbitration, and that it was just going to be hard for them to see eye to eye, at least right away before this deadline. But when I saw the actual figures that were exchanged, I was a little bit surprised that Burnes' camp didn't go a little bit higher. I believe, if I'm remembering off the top of my head correctly, he is asking for a record arbitration salary for a pitcher in his second year of arbitration. So there is that significant. But I think that a lot of people, when they saw these numbers, were not happy about it. And I understand the frustration, and I understand the optics of it when you see this reported that the Brewers for, you know, just over $10 million and Burnes filed for closer to $10.75 million, basically. They're about $750,000 apart, with the figures that they submitted. I think when you read that reported, it initially comes off as sounding like the Brewers and Corbin Burnes sat down at a table before this deadline, and they both stubborn and decided that they didn't want to give him an extra $750,000. We just don't know that that's how that played out, and I have a feeling that's probably not how that actually played out. You're talking about the arbitration process and the way that this works. You can't really compare it to negotiating a free agent contract or negotiating an extension or anything like that, because arbitration, just to be frank, it's a silly system. It's a silly system, and I think everybody knows it's kind of silly, but it's one of those things where everyone just accepts that this is the way that it's done on the business side of baseball. Any elite player who is going through the arbitration system is not going to get paid their fair value no matter what. I mean, Corbin Burnes is worth probably up to four times as much money as he's asked with that arbitration figure. And he knows that, and the Brewers know that. But they both know that this is the way that the system is set up, and so they're going to play the game. Because the way that this works in arbitration is both sides, if they can't come to an agreement, they're going to submit a figure, not necessarily what they think that player is worth, can convince the judge and the arbiters in this hearing to agree on as that player's salary. And in this case, I wouldn't be surprised if Burnes and the Brewers sat down at the table before this deadline, and maybe there talks something along the lines of, hey, we want to sign you to a two-year deal to buy out, you know, your last couple remaining arbitration years. Otherwise, we're comfortable with going to a hearing to see what other people think about this. And it could have been the Brewers that said that. It could have been Burnes that said that. Look, Corbin Burnes has pitched so well these last couple of years. I mean, there's an argument that he's been the best pitcher in baseball since the start of 2020. I think that he would be more than comfortable with going in and gambling on himself and saying that, yeah, I'm going to pick out this number. If we can't reach a deal here, we're going to pick out this number and we can win this case. So I don't think this was necessarily a situation where they were exactly $750,000 and they just couldn't close that gap. Now that those figures are out there, though, and both sides know what that difference is, you really got to stay at the table and you got to try to get something put together. You're so close that I have a hard time seeing and reach an agreement. So that's kind of where the line is for me, where if they let this get all the way to a hearing, I don't think that's necessary. But even if it does get that far, I think that some people might be overreacting just a little bit to the kind of consequences that that hearing might have. Obviously, it's not a process that anyone wants to go through. But I think a lot of people are assuming that the worst case scenario is just going to automatically play out. And a comparison that I've seen a lot has been with Josh Hader a couple of years ago, where they couldn't come to an agreement. They went to an arbitration hearing. Hader lost. And then that kind of soured the relationship. A completely relevant comparison because we're talking about two different players at two very different positions. Hader's a reliever and Burns is a starter. And the arbitration is very, very different what the criteria is for starting pitchers and relievers. Burns is coming off a season where he made every scheduled start pitching every fifth day. He threw over 200 innings. He was one of the better pitchers in the National League again. So an arbiter is going to look at that, and that's an impressive resume to go off of. You compare that to Hader's case where he was a reliever who didn't pick up a lot of saves. The arbitration system is probably tougher on relievers than it is on anybody else because arbitration in general just looks at so many older players in the modern game. So a judge is going to look at that situation and they were going to rule against him that entire time. And you're talking $2 million between Hader and the Brewers. That's a pretty decent Burns. And I think just going into this too, if it does go to a hearing, Burns has a way better case to win than Hader does. So it'll be interesting to see how the situation plays out. Like I said, I don't think they should let it get to a hearing. But after hearing just that those numbers were exchanged and that they didn't come to a deal right away, I didn't have an especially strong reaction to that. I don't think that's as big of a story as it's been puffed up to be. Like I said, it would be nice to avoid the arbitration hearing. But for now, I think I'm willing to just wait it out. Hopefully they keep talking and they can close that gap.
Awesome, awesome stuff from Jack Stern on the Locked On Brewers podcast, who joins us from the Brew Crew Ball, also does the stuff for the game was or the Score in Wisconsin. As a daily Brewers podcast, guys, we have talked about trades. We have talked about possible trades. We have talked about free agent deals and more. There's prospects. What else have we talked about? All kinds of stuff. I'm curious from Jack, a guy who covers the Brewers like no other, what his thoughts are on new president of baseball operations, Matt Arnold, and the job he's done thus far, including those comments from Willie Adames. On October 27th, shortly after the Brewers season ended, Jack, then president of baseball operations, David Stearns, stepped down and Matt Arnold was then brought up. He probably just switched chairs, really, because he was probably sitting right next to him. Since then, it's been busy for Matt Arnold. Since then, he traded Colton Wong, traded Hunter Renfro, traded for William Contreras. It's you know, Brian Anderson, who we just talked about, Wade Miley, an old face, back to Milwaukee. Jack, overall, and I know it's only been a few months, and we're going to get to the Willie Adames comments to finish off the podcast, so don't, if you're listening, don't feel like we forgot about that. And again, I know it's only been a few months, Jack, but from what you can gauge so far from Matt Arnold and the job he has or has maybe not done in this short time, what are your thoughts on that?
I think so far that based on the moves that Matt Arnold has made since he took over as the head executive for the Brewers, it's very clear that he has, or I shouldn't just say he and his staff, because these guys he's the head honcho, but these guys all work together on this stuff. It's a group effort. But he and his staff have had a very good understanding of if they want to avoid missing out on the playoffs again next season. I think that there have been some additional moves out there to make that they haven't made yet. And because he's recognized what the issues were and he's worked to address them. He fixed the hole that they have at catcher by acquiring William Contreras. Atlanta probably viewed him with him, but the Brewers have a pretty strong reputation with catchers' defensive games behind the plate, their pitch framing, their blocking skills. So I'm pretty optimistic about that. The moves that he's made in the rotation, big issue last year, and some of that was due to underperformance. A lot of it was due to injuries, the rotation. They needed a little more depth there, and Miley brings that. We're talking about a team that was supposed to be built on its rotation last year, and for a variety of different reasons and with things going wrong, they ended up with Jason Alexander throwing 70 innings for him, and I'm sure that was not part of the plan. But really, that's just representative of understanding what some of the issues were with last year's team. In addition to Miley, he's made a couple of other interesting additions to the starting pitching depth. You talk about Bryce Wilson, who was acquired from the Pirates a few days ago. Yep. acquired Jansen Junk in the Renfro trade. None of these guys may seem, you know, super exciting, and none of their big league numbers are all that impressive. But when you look at the arsenals that these guys have and some of the former top prospect status that these guys have had, they have more upside than someone like Jason Alexander does. So Arnold's done a good job of improving the catching position, improving the starting pitching depth, even in the bullpen too, which was a little bit of an issue down the stretch last year. I know that the Brewers have not added a lot of proven names in that bullpen, but you also need to look at the fact that the relief market was not especially deep this year. There weren't really any elite setup guys out there. And I'm just generally not a fan of how inconsistent those performance. But one area for the Brewers that was a weakness was they had one of the softest tossing bullpens in baseball last year. Their average fastball velocity was in like the bottom five of all bullpens. And Arnold, again, has addressed that by adding some high velocity guys. You're going to have Javi Guerra, who was claimed off of waivers from Tampa Bay. So they're going out and they're getting guys who can bring it a little bit in that bullpen. And they have some interesting arms down there who have the arsenals and have the stuff to break out and potentially become some solid high leverage guys at the back end of that bullpen. And we talked about, too, about Brian Anderson. I don't think that's an earth-shattering move by any stretch of the imagination. And it's going to depend on how they plan to use him and where they think, as we talked about earlier. But again, he raises the floor of that position player. You know, a little bit more reliable fallback option if some of their young players don't perform as well as they're hoping. I think that really the one area that's left is I would like to see still another right-handed hitting outfielder added to this group. I talked about it before. He actually has reverse ground between a couple of different positions instead of really being a full-time outfielder or anything of that stretch. So I think there's still a little bit of work, left to do. I don't think the Brewers are done yet either. I think that they're probably done for the most part on the free agent market just because the pickings are starting to get a little bit slim there. But they do have a pretty deep team right now. They don't have really a superstar on this team. The closest thing to it is probably Willy Adames. But they have a very deep group, both on the pitching side and on the position player side. I think if they can just make the group a little more balanced by adding another right-handed bat in that outfield, I think they're going to be in pretty good shape.
So you talked about Willy Adames, Jack, there, and sort of your one of the remaining superstars, I guess, if you want to say, for the Milwaukee Brewers. And there were some interesting comments from Willy. Yesterday, the Brewers held an event over at Dugout 54 over there by American Family Field, the Hot Stove Cold Brews, which used to be the on-deck event, and that's a whole nother conversation for a whole nother day on how that event transpired. However, Jack, Willie said some interesting things yesterday about how he and the organization, quote, have not had conversations. Now, I thought that to be kind of odd. It struck out in my brain right away to be kind of odd because if I do recall, I believe it was in late November, Willy Adames had said that they had contract negotiations. So is this maybe just a Willy just mixing up maybe his words, maybe getting confused? Are you concerned at all at this point with where Willy and maybe the organization could be heading?
I'm not really going to be especially concerned on those comments last night because, like you said, it seems like inconsistent messaging. Adames said back in November that he and the Brewers had some preliminary talks about an extension. And then he said tonight that, you know, there have been no conversations about an extension. Maybe he just misspoke. Maybe there haven't been any additional conversations earlier in the offseason. It's just too much just because it's a fan event. It's meant to be kind of laid back and kind of loose. The comments are coming, you know, from a player himself who, you know, has just kind of had a bunch of microphones shoved in his face about this and he's getting a bunch of questions.
Maybe some drinks.
Right. And maybe there's probably a good chance he's just trying to give the PR friendly answer to all of these questions.
Sure.
And maybe it just didn't come out quite right. Maybe he misphrased it, misspoke a little bit. It would be interesting to hear, you know, if we can get some comments from the front office side on it, maybe from Matt Arnold. But if they asked him, he would probably just give you the line that these guys will usually give you that, oh, we're open to any extension talks with any of our players, and then they'll leave it at that. I do think that the Brewers do need to really seriously, at some point, if they haven't already, try to see if they can build a little bit of momentum towards extending Willy Adames, simply because premium shortstops don't grow on trees. And Willy Adames, you can make the case that he's not quite on the level as guys like, you know, Trey Turner or Carlos Correa, who are getting these massive contracts. But last season, he was nearly a five-war player, and that excellent defender at shortstop, at the very least, he's an above average hitter, and there's probably potential for a little bit more in there too if he can get the on base percentage up a little bit. And when you look at how much money these shortstops made in free agency this year, I think some people have cited that as a reason why an extension might not happen. But I see it a little differently. I think that the money that these guys are getting should add extra motivation from the Brewers' perspective to try to get them locked up, because these shortstops are not going to get cheaper.
No.
Expensive. I mean, it's $300 million deals right now, but if you, especially if Adamas hits the open market in the midst of a weak shortstop class, you're definitely looking at the possibility that the going rate for shortstops could be even higher, and that Adamas could really be in for a payday that the Brewers just can't keep up with. And maybe on the flip side, maybe Adamas's camp recognizes that too, and they do kind of want to play the waiting game and see if how he can perform the next couple of years and see if he can hit free agency in that favorable position. From the Brewers' side too, it feels like you have an opportunity in front of you right now to, even if it seems like a lot of money up front that you're paying Adamas, when you consider how the market will develop over time, there is a chance that that contract could actually end up being below market value, whatever it is that he's asking for in an extension. And you're talking about a guy too who has said multiple times that he loves playing here, he loves the city, he loves the fans, and the fans love him back too. So it just seems like if there's a guy who you're willing to exception for and pony up a little bit of extra money, I think that Willy Adamas would be the guy. I know that generally I understand why the Brewers operate the way they do. When you look at a lot of the contracts they could have signed and how those contracts aged with those signed elsewhere, the Brewers have usually ended up being right about this stuff. But I see that it's too good to pass up. It's not especially likely in my mind that the Brewers are ever going to be in a situation like this again, where they seem to have a potential chance at locking a guy like this up at this position. I'm not especially concerned about any of the comments that we're hearing last night or that there's a huge story there. But I do think that at some point, if the Brewers haven't already, they do need to start seeing if they can build a little bit more mental take for an extension offer.
Absolutely incredible stuff from Jack Stern. Jack, thank you. I know your schedule's busy. My schedule's busy. We worked around some angles on trying to reach each other to record this podcast. So I thank you so much for joining me. And before we end this podcast, before we end this show, Jack, please, because if you guys are not following Jack, and you can see if you're watching on Twitter, at by Jack Stern on Twitter, I cannot recommend him enough on Twitter. If you're a Brewers fan, to get over there and check out his stuff. Where else can we find your stuff, Jack?
So you can find my stuff at Brew Crew Ball. I usually have columns that are going up almost every week, published multiple times a week. It's a mix of just covering breaking news, answering some fan questions, doing some statistical breakdowns and deep dives on some players on the roster in the organization. That's a little bit of everything. So you can find my stuff there. Again, that's brewcrewball.com. And then during the season, usually I'm on the Score Wisconsin out of Appleton. That's AM 1570 if you're in the area. So usually I have a weekly segment on this once the season starts. So if we get to that point, you can listen to me there every week too.
That's incredible stuff. Thank you. Thank you, Jack. And thank you all for making this podcast part of your daily routine. You can find the Locked On Brewers podcast everywhere you get your podcasts. We are on Twitter. We are on Facebook. We are on YouTube. At Locked On Brewers. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon_Snide. And of course, thank you for making Locked On Brewers your first listen. For your next listen, check out the MLB Locked On Prospects. Host Lindsey Crosby is a prospect encyclopedia, and he is going deep on the MLB stars of tomorrow. It is free and available wherever you get your podcast. Thank you for tuning in to hear me ramble on about the Brewers and hearing Jack provide some insight about the Milwaukee Brewers that we haven't had yet. So thank you to Jack for that. Coming up tomorrow, a fan feature Friday, another one, our third edition. I'll be joined by two more Milwaukee Brewer fans and two fans of the Locked On Brewers podcast as part of our feature. We're going to play a little fun game on that episode. So stay tuned, check that out. Until next time, be safe, stay warm, and of course, go Brewers.